You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Forever Giants, the podcast. I'm Ranelle Brooks Moon. In today's episode, I sit down with Noah Lowry at the beautiful Toomey Cellars in Calistoga. The story of the San Francisco Giants is legendary. In my years as the official voice of the Giants, I've had the privilege to meet countless players and personalities whose passion for this team is only matched by their love for the game. Their stories are intertwined within the fabric of this team's history. They are Forever Giants.
Got him. Good changeup. That has been a money pitch today. Wow.
The story of Noah Lowry is one of facing down adversity time and time again. The California native pitched his way to being an All-American at Pepperdine University, and the San Francisco Giants took him with the last pick of the first round in the 2001 MLB draft.
Whoa, Noah Lowry is ready.
In 2005, Lowry began his career with a 7-0 record, the longest winning streak for any pitcher in San Francisco Giants history.
That's the ballgame.
His five-year career was a series of ups and downs. He faced the downtimes head-on before injuries would end his baseball career, but not before he would leave his mark on the city of San Francisco. Well, Noah, it's great to see you, and thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
It's my pleasure, yes.
And we're right here in your backyard. You and the family have settled in this area.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a better spot to have a conversation with a better person.
Whoa, so. Cut it out. Thank you so much.
So, yeah, happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll get to the family a little bit later, but what we love to do with this show is really have our viewers learn about the journey of our Forever Giants, and that's what we'll start with, your journey as a Southern California kid.
Yeah. It happens fast, but California's been a big part of my life in general. Growing up down in Ventura County and little town called Ojai. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. Some people, Ohio, no, it's Ojai, little town in Southern California. And from there, things really picked up after high school, going into junior college for a year and then Pepperdine and Malibu. And from there, life changed dramatically. That was when I was drafted by the Giants out of Pepperdine. And the journey began into this culture, this family that, you know, at the time you don't see it, you don't really understand it, but you know, on the other end of it now, transitioning out of the game, it's like an extended family. So.
Yeah, you have a different perspective now that you're out of the game.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to that little boy. In Ojai, I read that you were on a pair of skis when you were like 5 years old.
I've been pretty active in the outdoor space. Yeah, and it started at a young age. My parents were active people, and there was a time where, I would get out and get on the skis, snowboard, skateboard, until, you know, there comes a time where it's like, well, you got sports and you want to look at, you know, continuing on, you've got to be careful. You start to weigh risk and reward.
Exactly. You know, exactly. So what other sports did you get into other than baseball? What were your sports of interest when you were a kid?
Yeah, I dabbled in football a little bit.
Did you?
And with the timing seasonally of baseball, basketball also made sense. It was another way to, another team sport that I could play, a lot of running back and forth. And it gave me a way to condition to head back into baseball. So basketball was a big one for me. And then individual sports. I had some buddies in high school that played a little bit of golf. So I started to dabble in golf. My game hasn't really gotten any better, hasn't really gotten any worse, but I still enjoy playing it. Yeah. Just sport in general.
Yeah. Well, when was it, at what age did it become clear to you that baseball was your passion, perhaps your favorite sport, and something that you actually wanted to pursue?
That's a good question. So thinking back on it, in high school, I had told people, I said, well, you know, people ask you, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Yeah.
I want to be, you know, an astronaut or I want to play baseball. So I would tell myself that story, and I started to believe in that. really when I got into to Pepperdine at the time, and just to give you some context around what that means, I questioned just like, you know, the possibility in that. Like I wanted to believe it, and so I kept telling myself, you know, like the fake it till you make it type thing. And there was a part of me that was like, I saw some talent in myself at a young age to be able to play the game, but again, believing in it didn't really start to settle in until I was drafted in junior college and at that time then offered a scholarship to go play baseball at Pepperdine.
Right.
And it was like, okay, not only, you know, do I see something, but others are starting to see it as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think if I had to put an exact time frame on it, I would say it was in that time frame from going out of junior college into Division I.
That's interesting, because yeah. I would have thought it would have been younger as like a little leaguer.
Yeah. Again, it's like the stories that I told myself, I wanted to believe in it, but to be honest and transparent, no. At the time, it was like, I have this grandiose idea. Yes, I would love to be able to play baseball. However, I see that mountain over there that I got to climb, and it's like, I want to start climbing it. I just may not necessarily know where to begin, how to begin. Do I believe in myself enough?
Gotcha.
And then just over time and repetition, that started to come together, yeah.
Gotcha. Well, as a young athlete in baseball, perhaps football and basketball, who were some of the athletes that were your heroes as a young athlete,
yeah,
as a kid?
Yeah, I smile because I was like, we were talking about earlier, but Will Clark is one guy that just comes to mind for me. Just the way that he played the game, just with honor, he played hard. And I loved his sweet swing that he had and the point. You know, it's like,
so good.
So good. So I focused on it, and people ask me, like, you know, did you like certain teams? And I'm so like, well, I liked West Coast teams just because I grew up on the West Coast, but I really gravitated more towards players. And Will being one of them. I played first base, JT Snow being another one. And then pitchers.
Yeah.
Pitched as well, so
yeah
that ended up being the end game. And guys like Nolan Ryan, who was just a hard-nosed athlete,
wow.
The way that he played the game, you know, he got respect from other players in the game through his performance. And I think the person that he was, I never got a chance to meet him, so I make that up a little bit, but him and Roger Clemens stick out to me as guys that I really put a lot of time and focus into just watching the semantics and the way that they went and they played the game.
Sure.
And then lefties as well, being left-handed.
That's right.
Chuck Finley, he was an Angel at the time, and he's somebody I watched just growing up in Southern California. Guys like Jamie Moyer and Tom Glavine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then going back in time, I started to watch the Major League Baseball put together. It was called the All Century Team. It was a DVD that they put together.
Yeah,
I watched that thing so many times, and there was players on there like Gibson and like Warren Spahn and Koufax, and that was really when I started to tie into the history of the game.
Yeah.
And I started to appreciate, because I wasn't around to see some of these guys play. So
of
it was
course,
like,
yeah.
That's when I really started to focus on like. Again, more of the character traits of these athletes than necessarily getting a chance to meet them or play with them. Some of them I was fortunate enough
right.
to do so, but
right. So you played a little
long
first
answer
base.
Long, yeah.
No, it's okay. You played a little first base. Did you do that before you started pitching?
Yeah.
And then you
yeah.
made the transition.
I played multiple positions until it there came a point where I had to decide.
Okay.
And being left-handed, you know, it was like
yeah.
kind of limited, you know, being lefty. It's like I always wanted to go play. I want to take a chance at shortstop, you know, but it didn't necessarily make sense. But first base was a position that I could play. And when I wasn't pitching, I would go over there, and it limited my throwing, because if I was pitching, I didn't want to make, you know, too many additional throws.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, all the way up, you know, the little league type days through high school. And not into college, because at that point it's like it's time to make a decision right. on where I want to focus.
Right, you're pitching
direction.
In college. Yeah. 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 But, so have yeah, you been school. Able to develop a relationship with Will Clark since you admired him so much as a youngster?
You know what? That's one of the I'm still such a huge fan of like.
Listen,
these guys.
I get it. I know I'm the like, feeling. I'm the same way.
I go into like fanboy. I'm like, okay, bring it together.
Right, right.
Yeah, JT too. I told him, really? Like, yeah. okay, I don't want to sound weird, dude, but I got all your baseball cards.
I got a little man crush on you, if I'm being real, yeah. right, right.
I know we're teammates, but yes, that is, yeah. So, yes, to answer your question directly, yes. Will Clark, I'm like, every time I see him, I'm like, man.
I know. I feel the same
mind.
Way. I'm with you on that. It's weird that he knows my name. It's just weird,
yeah.
right?
And then you get a chance to meet some of these people and get to know who they are, and it's like, wow, a whole new level of appreciation because they're great people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes, that's been a big joy of mine.
Well, tell me a little bit, about your family dynamic as you were growing up and getting into sports and kind of finding your way, and how did your family support you? And I know your dad had a huge impact on you growing up, and still does, obviously.
Yeah, you know, my family was, looking back on it, thinking about it, I'm the oldest of four, one. I've got another brother and two sisters under us, and they were always there. They were always present, meaning like they took us to the games, they got us involved in sports. They provided us an opportunity and an avenue for us to blossom. And they didn't get in the way of that. Okay, my dad, he didn't coach us a lot. Mm-hmm. He was a high jumper, a track guy. Mm. He played a little basketball too, but the presence is one thing, and I'm sitting here and I'm just thinking through it. He really opened up our thinking, the ability not to limit ourselves, you know. Like there's something it's in Philippians, it's biblical, so I'm not gonna get too far into that, but it was like a line that talks about like you can do all things, it talks about through Christ and so on, but it was the, you know, if you take that the first part of it, if you're not religious, whatever, all good, but like the if you really believe in yourself enough and you're willing to, you know, stick with it and fall down and get back up and persevere and continue to go, then there's the opportunities will open up, and that way of thinking started at a young age, and so for that, both him and my mom, I appreciate that side of, you know, who they were for us as kids.
Yeah And I know your dad had a really strong work ethic that I know you appreciate, and I read that he started working when he was 17 years old.
Yeah.
And he was a contractor, and he just worked where he was grinding.
He's go, 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 yeah. works hard, attention to detail is a big part of what he does, and what I make up is that it's part of what makes him great in what he does do. He's an artist in a sense that he does. He builds houses, and... He's still doing it to this day. We're actually starting to have conversations about that transition and what's next in life for him, because he's coming to a point where he's going to be looking at the next phase in life. But he has always been a hard worker, yeah. And my mom, the same.
Mm-hmm.
She worked hard and just in different ways. She wasn't building houses, but she started out working in a restaurant, waitressing, and then looked after us four crazy kids at times, which having kids myself now, it's like,
hey,
it's a whole new appreciation.
Exactly, right?
It's
right.
Like,
yeah.
Mom, I took you for granted.
Right?
A few times. I see it now.
Yes, yes.
Will you forgive me?
Well, I was also reading that your dad had you and your brother every summer in the Southern California sun. You were basically working with him or for him. You guys had shovels in your hands in the heat of Southern California in your summertime.
We started working at a young age, yeah.
yeah.
We wanted to be, he was our dad, so it's like we wanted to be involved in what he did.
Yeah.
And in that, my brother got heavy into the trades. Myself, not as much. I'm like still the like light bulb guy. But we gained an appreciation for just like what hard work was. And he would, he would give us little things to do at the jobs. I mean, it wasn't like we were young, so yeah. It was like, you know, come hang out and you get a chance to see what the work life is about. And the other side of it was like, you see what hard work looks like, and if this is something you want to do, great. I'll put time into teaching you whatever you want to know. And if this is not what you want to be doing, then that's cool too. Mm-hmm. Just understand that, you know, you may want to go out there and get an education and look at, you know, whatever it is you may want to get into, and sink, you know, that same work ethic into whatever it is you want to do. So
you could apply all of that in your professional baseball career, I'm sure.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, even up to this day, yeah. My parents, they, again, at a young age, there was just a lot of different characteristics within them that, I took moving forward. A lot of life lessons.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I want our viewers to know that the most interesting thing I discovered about your dad is that he was a fixture at Johnny Carson's house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Working on projects at the TV legend that is Johnny Carson.
Yeah, that
Did
was
you
cool.
understand what a big deal that was?
At the time, no.
No, not, of course
yeah,
not,
no,
right?
Not really. It's like, okay, yeah, that's cool. I mean, he lives on the, you know, it's a cool spot, nice house.
That's bananas.
As you get older, yeah, it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, the attention to detail and just the person that he was, I think speaks to the fact that, you know, people who I make up, I didn't get to know the man, but I would think that, you know, he appreciates hard work and attention to detail himself, and that's probably part of what made him great. So we got a chance to go down there, hang out, and like we'd have furniture pieces in our house, and he'd be like, oh, you know, you don't want them, you just, if you want them, take them, type thing. So
that is
so cool.
Unbelievably cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to high school, because this is how I imagine you in high school, Noah Lowry. I imagine you as like a superstar athlete. I imagine you as like voted like most popular, big man on campus, prom king, all of that. I see all of that in you. Am I on the right track at all?
Yeah, no.
Come on.
No, it's actually a little bit more of what I make up to be on the opposite side of that.
Really?
Just struggled with my identity through high school. Yeah, and wasn't sure kind of who I was. I was carrying a lot of things from childhood into high school. Like, I had said it before, and it's kind of personal. I don't mind talking about it, but for whatever reason, I wet the bed for a long time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so there was a part of me, like, I wasn't sure what that was about.
Sure.
And, like, it lasted for a while, and so like, and it really just like eroded my confidence in myself. It was like, well, who, you know,
of course,
who am I? Like, what does this look like? And so, but
did you talk to anybody about that? Did you ever talk to anybody about it? Or
no,
you just kept to yourself.
Yeah,
yeah, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, outside of my parents,
sure,
at home, and
yeah,
it's like, yeah, I didn't even want to bring friends over. Or have like, if there's a girl I'd like, I was like, I'll bring her around that, you know? So didn't have I had a couple friends, and sports was a great outlet for me to just go, like, get away from all that.
Gotcha.
And be able to just forget about, like, these things that, again, I was making up, but they were real to me at the time, you know?
Sure.
And so, yeah, I wasn't super popular, and I just kind of rough around the edges in high school.
It was a struggle for you.
Yeah, kind of rough around the edges, and it really... Sports gave me not just an outlet to get away from that, but also to not necessarily, I guess, recreate sort of an identity around who I was,
mm-hmm,
about what I made up, if that makes sense.
It does.
It was like, I made this up over here, and this gives me a chance to create something new. And, you know, I was good at that, and it built confidence up in me. And
of
so,
course, yeah.
Yeah, high school, it was a lot more like that, actually.
Well, that's good to know, because,
yeah,
you know, so many of us struggle with high school. And I know, like, a lot of our younger viewers would probably appreciate hearing that, because I'm sure they're going through the same struggles. All the struggles are different now in 2018, but
everybody
goes through something in high school. So I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And then, so you're finding your way, and you get drafted by the Texas Rangers.
I did, yeah.
In 1999.
Yeah.
Were you in high school at the time? Or?
I was in junior college.
Okay.
I went to junior college for a year. And, again, just another, I was, I moved out of the house too, so there's all kinds of new happening in my life.
Oh man,
at the time.
You're taking on a lot at this age.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to get out. I wanted to be independent. I wanted to start figuring out what life was like for myself. And so, out of high school, I moved to just not far away, you know, 20 minutes or so down the road, and went to Ventura Junior College, and got drafted out of there.
But you chose to go to Pepperdine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in that, you know, that's an interesting time frame, I think, for athletes in general, mm-hmm. who are transitioning into sport. Like, how do I decide what I want to do? How do I know if I want to go play professionally, or how do I know if college is maybe the better route for me?
What I wanted to ask you. Why'd you make that decision to go to Pepperdine?
Yeah, so like these questions started to come up, and I can tell you at the time I had no idea. Mm. I knew that as a young athlete, I wasn't where I thought that I could be, just performance based, like with my consistency and who I was as a young athlete and just my development. Again, I was just out of high school, still trying to figure myself out as a person in general. And
so you felt you needed more time.
Just time.
Yeah.
I felt like time would be a good direction for me to look at, like, not just time on the field at a higher level in Division I sports, but I could also start to put an education behind myself and just open up my thinking and get into a new environment. And then if baseball didn't work out, then I could look at falling back on an education. And
exactly.
I started to just navigate through what that might look like based on where I was at. But I feel like there is a need out there for kids and for families in general. It's like, well, how do we look at these different decisions, and how do we even know how to weigh them? Are we even asking the questions that, may need to be asked?
Yeah.
So
look at you growing up and maturing at that time, making that big decision.
Well, yeah, hindsight, it's like, okay, I see that it worked out now, because we wouldn't be sitting here otherwise. Yeah. But it was really based out of survival at the time. It was like, I don't really know where to go right now. I see this opportunity over here with the Texas Rangers, which was awesome. I was like, wow, that's so cool.
You must have just been out of your mind to get that.
Yeah, and it all happened so fast. Yeah. Like, it was over a small period of time.
Was it overwhelming for you?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because it was so fast, and it was like drafted, and then you've got these schools who are now looking at you, and what do I do with that? A good problem to have, no doubt. Like, well, what is the best decision? How do I even know what that might look like? And it worked out.
Yeah.
And that's really what the factors came down to for me. I was like, okay, well, at junior college, I can go back into junior college for another year if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I could still look at the draft. I could still consider Texas as well for at least up for a while, up mm-hmm. until I don't know what the time frame is, but I think they have the option to negotiate for a while into the next season.
Right.
Or I could look at a 4-year. So I've got these different options. And as a young athlete, I don't have many options available. So that seemed like the best fit for me. It gave me an opportunity to continue to play, put an education behind myself in the event that baseball didn't work out, and then I could just develop as a young athlete or a young human in general.
Yeah.
I had a lot of figuring out to do. Heck, I still do.
But we listen.
So
we were saying earlier, it's a journey.
Yeah.
It never stops.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good decision for you. And something else I did not know was that you and pitcher Dan Heron were at Pepperdine at the same time.
Yeah.
And there were additional coincidences about you two. Like, you went to high school like within 100 miles of each other, and you guys went on to get drafted close to each other. You're in the rotation together as the Pepperdine Waves. What?
Having myself and Dan Heron is like a 1-2 punch, so to speak, in the starting rotation. We had some other, Eric Valenzuela, who's now a coach up at St. Mary's, and another guy named Jay Adams. As our starting staff, we had some veteran leadership, and then we had two younger guys, myself and Dan.
Yeah.
And with supposed high ceilings, so to speak, there was people could see in us talent, and we just needed to go out and apply that talent. So
was that kind of cool for you to kind of both navigate this whole portion of your journey together?
It really was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sitting here talking about it now, you don't see like how the future is going to unfold. But we had a really good run at Pepperdine.
You did.
And in that, we both got drafted very close to one another. And thankfully, I got drafted by the Giants, and my career took off that way. And him at the time, he was drafted by St. Louis, but then he came back over to Oakland later on. And so it was like, you know, calling him and talking to him just about like, hey, you know, you know where you're going to live yet? You know, is there anything I can help you with? And then, you know, getting a chance to pitch against each other and the Bay Bridge series and stuff.
How
like that.
How crazy,
like,
right?
So cool.
That
you
is
know?
Like full circle.
Yeah.
From Pepperdine to the Bay Bridge series.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
So, you know, we're playing against each other, but in the end, it's like we're baseball, we're athletes, we're all family here. And so.
Yeah. Are you guys still homies?
Yeah, again, like people at different periods in life I consider them close friends, you know, like I consider them close friends, and we may not see each other all the time, we may not talk all the time, but we pick back up right where we left
exactly.
off.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, he's somebody that'll always be near and dear to my heart.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love that story. Do you like how I used homies like the kids?
Yeah, that was good.
Like the kids. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Slide it in there.
Hey, tell me about your junior year at Pepperdine, because that was your best season, right?
That was probably what I consider to be like one of the pivotal moments in my playing career. And I say that because we talked a little bit earlier about just like the belief in myself and who I was. Well, I went into Pepperdine and I had gotten a full scholarship, and I had put all these, again, made up ideas about who I needed to be all of a sudden. You know, like all these expectations and just weights on my shoulder
pressure.
That I was carrying around.
Right.
Yeah, pressure that I didn't need to, but
That's
I did.
Right. Right.
And so in that, I got in there and I struggled. And I struggled almost that entire first year there. And in that, going into the junior year, I told myself, I'm like, I'm just going to let it go and just leave it on the field. And whatever happens, happens. Like I've got to trust in my own abilities, go out there and I'm going to give it my best effort and just see what happens. Like, putting all these pressures, or, you know, the perceived pressures on myself wasn't helping me at all. And it was actually creating exactly what I didn't want it to create. And
sure.
So it's like, they're giving me, you know, they're not going to get rid of me. That was a big fear of mine. I'm like, you know, am I going to lose my scholarship? What's this going to look like? Because I got pulled as a starter. And so the coach came to me after my sophomore year, and he said, we're going to give you another chance to start. It's up to you, you know, how you're going to handle that. Your scholarship's safe. And that was really reassuring for me. And that helped as well. It helped sort of lift that weight. And
that confidence is coming back again.
And in that, it was like, okay, I just need to let go of what I'm holding on to here and what I'm making up. And I did. And I went out that next year, and I started off 7-0 and lost one in there and won another 7 and then lost another one, and that's how it ended up. I ended up like 14-2.
Yeah.
And ended up as an All-American. And again, it was just mindset. It was like, if you can let go of what might limit you, and it's easier said than done.
But, totally.
But in that, that really allowed me to catapult or springboard into my professional career. Because after that, I was drafted by the Giants, and things took off from there. But had I not letting go of, again, these perceived thoughts, I don't know what would have happened.
Right. Did you have any coaches or mentors that helped you that year that really helped you figure that out?
Nobody really, like, just, again, my parents were there as a support, like, hey, you know, whatever you want to do. Because, again, during that sophomore year, it was like, do I even want to play? You know, I'm beating myself up about, like, is this right for me?
Mm.
You know, I'm on this journey, but is this really going to make sense? So faced with some adversity, and it's like part of me wanted to run.
Sure.
And so in that, like, my parents were there to just support me and say, like, you know, whatever you decide to do, and, you know, it's okay, you know, you've done great already type thing. And then just our coaches standing behind us at the time, you know, that was a big deal. Mentor wise though, at the time, not really. Yeah.
So you just really did the work on yourself and figured it out pretty much for yourself.
Yeah. You know, circumstance at the time was driving me.
Gotcha. And,
well, just one thing led to another, and it was just I was in a fight for survival at the time.
And that you did, and
yeah. So
not long after that, the Giants come a calling.
So in that, just working through it and letting go of what I was making up. That after that 14-2 season, drafted by the Giants.
Will Clark, the history, the legacy.
How much better can it get?
The West Coast.
And again, you don't realize it at the time, but it's like there's a lot of history to this team. There's a culture that's established on, like, winning, and they're going to go out and they're going to put a winning team on the field, and they're going to give you a chance and the fan base a chance to, we're going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciated that playing for the Giants. And going through my career with the Giants, it becomes like one big family. I mean, I've gotten to know you over time. You know, there's people that have been there they've spent their whole careers there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that the culture that they've created over there is like, that's special to me.
Yeah.
It's special.
Yeah.
But being drafted at the time, it's like, you don't necessarily see that. It's like,
right. Right. So you get drafted, you get called up September 2003?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, here you are now.
Cup of coffee, yep.
Here you are. You got your uni on, your big league uni, big league ballpark. What do you remember about that day?
I remember my kneecap shaking. It becomes like, it goes from being sort of surreal, is this, you know, is this really going to happen, to like, wow, here it is now. We're here. We're in it.
Yeah.
And
which you'd been working so hard for.
Yeah, time sort of slows down at that point for a second.
Okay.
It was like, have you seen the movie The Matrix?
Of course, yeah. That's, yes.
Neo.
You were in The Matrix.
Bullets are flying by. Everything's really slow. And he's just... time just really slowed down for a second. And, again, I was just soaking up as much as I could. Giants were, I think it was it 03 or 02? It was one of those years, but...
We just come off the World Series in 02.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, again, they were in the race, and so it was like a call-up. You're going to get a chance to, like, maybe get some innings in and just get a look, and it was, you know, everything that I thought it would be and then some.
Yeah.
And not just that, but it was like, oh, I want more of that, you know? Like.
That's right, and you got more of that.
This is everything that, I've worked for. Now I want to go out and I want to apply it, and I want to help our team go out there and win a championship. And mentally, I'm ready to put myself all in, and physically as well. It's like, let's go. So it's really just at the time, you need to understand that there's the bigger picture, and like there's going to be a time where, you know, you may get your opportunity to stick or stay or have a chance to prove yourself up there. And and so the cup of coffee came in that 03 time. And then, you know, being a starter, it's like, you know, they've got five starters and they're pretty good.
So
something has to happen, whether it's a trade or if it's an unfortunate injury or something. But, you know, there will be a time where you're going to get your chance. And so you just keep plugging. That's what I told myself anyways. It was like, whether I'm here or I'm in AAA, I'm just going to continue to go out and hone my skills in this game and just be the best I can be for myself and this team.
Yeah.
And when my opportunity does come, because I prepared myself this way, I'm confident in what's going to come out of it.
You'll be ready. You'll be ready when that opportunity comes.
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were, because let's move to 2004, kind of a partial rookie year for you.
Yeah.
6-0, 3.82 ERA and 14 starts. National League Player of the Week in August.
Yeah.
How about that?
August was a good month for
me. It was a good month, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You're on top of the world, you must be thinking, right?
Well, yeah.
It's okay. Well, you can say that.
Everything was coming together. Yes, I started 6-0.
Hello.
So, like, it's like, okay, I couldn't think of a better way to start.
Exactly.
A lot of that was team-based, though, as well.
Sure.
Like, there was times where I could have very easily lost,
sure,
and our team battled back and put us in a position to win.
That's why we always say it's a team sport.
The beauty of the team game. I mean, it does take, it takes a team to bring it together. So, yes, things were coming together, and I was getting the opportunity to just find out what the big leagues was about,
mm-hmm,
and how quickly and how good players were at that level and are at that level. I really appreciated that. Like, how quickly guys made adjustments and how in tune with their own physical abilities they were and their ability to make adjustments on the fly. And in turn, now I'm called up, you know?
Yep.
The bar's here, so.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, what were your lessons that rookie season? What did you really learn? So you saw the game. Was the game a little faster for you? Or
mistakes were magnified.
Ah, yes.
Because the level of play is so high that it could be orders of magnitude with these mistakes. And mm-hmm, so, like, one, you're trying to limit those as best as you can. I mean, we're human, so we all make them. And then on the other end, like I'd mentioned, just how quickly guys will transition pitch to pitch or at bat to at bat and in regards to the pitcher hitter sort of duel that's going on there.
Sure. Yeah. And you, at that time, I read that you said it's really 90% mental the game of baseball is for you, right? About that a little bit.
Yeah, I believe so. I think, again, this is all just perceived, but I think that at that level, everybody has a physical ability to be there. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't necessarily be there.
Exactly.
And what I saw out of the guys that had played a long time, because when I came up, it was a veteran clubhouse. These were older guys. They were established guys, and a lot of them had a lot of success.
Yeah.
And what I saw in them was their ability mentally, like, whether it was like, a big game situation, pressure situation, these guys rose up to the occasion and they made adjustments and they prepared themselves and, you know, they believed in who they were. And,
mm-hmm,
and you know, the attention to detail and the consistency that they had within themselves was like, it was here. It started with the mindset and then it came out of the body after, but yeah.
So you learned a lot from mentally, just kind of observing the veteran guys and watching how they approach their jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about some of those guys, some of those extraordinary teammates you had and the impact they had on you.
I had played with some really good ones.
Yeah.
Right away, I played with Barry. So,
well,
you know, that's like watching him chase the record down and just the incredible athlete that he was. It's like, it was just fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It was like,
you had a front row seat.
I'm a teammate, yes, but I'm a fan as well, because it's like, I really appreciate what you do as an athlete. And especially when he was chasing the record down, I was like, he wasn't getting a lot of pitches at the time.
Yeah.
Guys would walk him and like, maybe they pitch to him and
maybe
they're trying to pitch.
Rubber chicken dances all over the place.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to pitch around him, but when he does get that pitch, he doesn't miss it.
Oh my God.
And it's like, wow, man.
Yeah. Unbelievable, right?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So like, things like that stick out to me. There was pitchers as well who, Matt Morris, he's a guy that he really had a big impact on who I was. He'd had some success in St. Louis, then we got him.
Uh-huh.
And, Zito was the same way a little bit. These guys, they knew what it took to go from good to great, in my opinion. And, Rigetti, he was another one. He's a pitching coach.
Of course, yeah.
And so these guys knew that, like, there was a certain level of detail and discipline that it took to bring yourself up from just being not just good. We don't want to be good. We want to be great. And
mm-hmm,
if we have to, we'll fall back on being good.
Mm-hmm.
But we're striving to be great. And so, like, just in talking to these guys about their approach to the game and the ebb and the flow of the season, and then just in observing them as a student of the game, I picked up a lot from them and applied it to my game. And like I mentioned, the a lot meaning like the discipline and seeing them in big game situations rise up.
Yeah.
And just their physical and mental abilities coming out and overcoming, you know, adversity, because it is an adverse game.
Yeah, it is. Well, you learn from the best.
Yeah,
what a blessing.
Yeah.
You were surrounded by a lot of greats.
Yeah, I had lefties like Kirk Reeder.
Yeah, Woody.
Scotty Ayer. He took me under his wing. Kirk did the same thing.
So cool.
I think about like Rob Nen, and there's just, I mean, the list could go on. There was young guys like Kaner, and these are, they're not so young anymore, but at the time, like Kane and, you know, young Tim Lincecum.
Oh, my goodness, of course, you know, yeah.
And then catchers, the battery relationship, you know,
yeah,
between that pitcher and catcher, guys like Matheny.
Matheny, oh, my goodness, he must have had a huge impact on you.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah.
The way that we studied the game together and just had open communication about, you know, our approach, and then, you know, a debrief after, it was like, that's special.
Yeah.
And in that, you know, the bond becomes tighter. Benji Molina is the same way.
Oh, my gosh. He was great, too. Yeah. Those are all good ones you just listed there.
I think so.
Pretty darn good. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
So, okay, 2005, you keep on rolling. And so basically a 7-0 start to your career.
So I had one after, yeah.
Early that year. Yeah, that's right, because it became the longest winning streak for any pitcher in San Francisco Giants history.
Yeah.
You are rolling.
Things are looking good.
What was clicking for you then? Or just, I guess, your confidence level was pretty much at an all-time high.
Yeah,
and
you know,
mentioned all those teachers you had, but you seemed like you had hit your stride.
Yes and no. So the numbers would say so.
Right.
But again, if you were to look at the day-to-day, I would say that the team aspect of the game really came out right then. And so I don't want to downplay it, because it's the fact that it's there.
It is what it is, Noah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's really cool. And in that too, the emphasis on the team game itself is like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because there was times where I could have lost, and we could have lost as a team, and they rallied around us and me, and picked us up when, you know, maybe I got bashed around a little bit, one inning or so. But yeah, I'd started to see what it took after that first year to have a little bit of success, and then also now I go back to the adjustments. Teams are making adjustments now, and individuals are making adjustments, and they have an idea of who you are and how you're going to approach them now. So
now you got to answer back.
It's cat and mouse. Mm-hmm. So now you got to become again new each time out.
Yeah.
Sorta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your approach to your game day, the days that you were starting. Of course, Ryan Vogelsong famously ate chicken enchiladas. Did you? I know you enjoyed your heavy metal music, right?
It's so fun. I did, yeah. I love Metallica. I just love Metallica.
Come
and then
on.
Then they come out the game, it's like, this is so
isn't
cool.
That the coolest Metallica
so cool.
Nights, right?
Yeah.
So you got your heavy metal going, and what else was your approach to getting in that mindset to get out there and pitch?
You know, music was a big piece for me. Music helped me quiet my mind, because there was always, I ended up with 100 starts exactly. That little guy in the back of my mind, and I think that everybody has him, like, always, you know, like, oh, you know, who's going to show up today? Are you going to be good enough? This, that, you know, it's like, quiet that voice down and just keep going. So, and music allowed me to sort of quiet myself down and focus on the here and now.
Okay.
And presence myself. And it's heavy metal at times. It was all kinds of music.
Yeah.
Even, like, all the way, like, on the other end of it, I think about Enya.
No,
like,
you did not. No,
like,
you were like new agey.
So it was all over the place.
That's
right?
Cool, though. I like it.
Yeah, there's like an up and a down.
Yeah.
And, so there was that. Yeah, but then there was also, like, who am I going to be facing that day? Meaning, like, what who's playing right now? What are their tendencies? You know, what's going to be, what could unfold, I guess, out on the field? Meaning, like, these guys are going to probably take a certain approach to me. I'm going to make sure that I know what kind of approach they're taking, meaning like what have they done leading up to this moment,
mm-hmm.
against maybe somebody similar to me,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's myself. And then, you know, how am I going to approach them going into that? And I want to make sure that it's not just me having these conversations, but, you know, myself and my battery mate are on the same page. And then you've got a team environment. So, like, you know, are we having conversations with maybe, like, I don't know, an infield coach or, you know, our staff? We're making sure that, again, we're on the same page as a team as much as we can be going into it.
Yeah.
So, again, really, really just heavily studying the game was a big part for me. And then again, the communication, it was a big deal.
It's key.
Yeah.
It's key.
And then I go back to adjustments, because all that stuff sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I think anyways. But then who shows up that day?
Exactly.
Like, where maybe I'm not locating one side. Maybe this pitch is not clicking.
Easy to say, harder to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when it all comes, August was a month where it just happened to come together.
It did come together.
But it didn't other times. And so, like,
right.
how do you make adjustments and what are you going to do then?
Yeah. 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 Well, speaking of that August of 2005, I think you said that's one of your fondest memories because you were the player of the month.
Yeah. You know, that was a month where we just talked about, am I locating on this side or that side? That month, really, just everything was clicking.
Yeah,
body felt good. It was Matheny and I at the time. I was throwing to him more often than not,
mm-hmm.
and it was just like we were just grooving together.
Totally in sync.
Yeah,
totally in
hitting
sync.
Hitting spots and
uh-huh.
having quick innings, and again, the great defense. I think pitching and defense is the key to winning games.
Yep.
It's solid defense behind us, timely hitting. It's like we're coming together because I can either do my part to open up opportunity for us to score some runs and get ahead, or I I can go the other way, which happens at times, and then, you know, we pick each other up back and forth. But at the time, in that August, things were really just clicking. Yeah, it was going, the 8-9 innings every time. And
yeah. And
we
how much comfort did it give you knowing that you had those guys backing you up defensively? Did that kind of take a little pressure off, or?
It's huge, just knowing that you have, because I pitched to contact. I wasn't a guy, like, I had maybe a season in there where I had an okay amount of strikeouts, but I didn't get a lot of swings and misses. I didn't throw hard, so.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to hit the ball. And knowing that you have good defense behind you is key when it comes to that. Like, if I do hang a changeup, and I just think about Pedro Feliz, who at the time was playing third base, or Eduardo Alfonso, these guys were—they had such good hands over
sure
there.
Did.
And it's like before I could turn my head to see how hard that ball was just hit at these guys, they're picking it
they're
up like
it.
It's no big deal and making the play.
That's
and
so like, good.
I had Omar Vizquel at shortstop. And,
how crazy!
Oh,
how awesome must that have been to play with him?
I could go on and on about it. He was special.
Highlight reel every game, right?
Yeah, he was
so
special.
Good.
And then Richie Aurelia, too.
Yep.
He was over there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just had some really good defense, behind me, and I was it was going to apply.
That you did. Let's just, for the record, August 2005, National League Player of the Month, you went 5-0, 0.69 ERA, Noah Lowry.
Yeah, things were rolling.
Congratulations
to
you.
That was a good one. Thank
that
you.
Was awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so now let's get to where it starts to get a little bit dicey.
Yeah.
Actually, we go on to some pretty big news right before the 2006 season. You get that big contract.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was cool. Obviously, I mean, it's like, okay, they see something. They want, you know, they're willing to have a conversation about what could be longer term.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for it. And so the opportunity presented itself. I couldn't see myself anywhere else. I didn't even know how to, but I didn't want to either.
Yeah.
So it was like, yes, let's make this happen. And we did. And that's a piece of the game that, like, it has to be part of the focus because it is, you know, it's part of who we are as athletes
of
and
course.
It's part of the business. And so when we get this piece out of the way, then it's like, okay, that's cool, that's great. We've made a commitment to each other for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. Now let's go out and put some work in. You know, yeah. Not that we weren't going to do that anyways, but it's like, okay, now we don't, that conversation we can shelve.
Now we can get to work.
Now we go, yeah.
Now we can get to work.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it was like, all right, I'm going to be a part of this team for at least this period of time. Well, maybe anyway, you know, there's trades and stuff in there, but it was like, okay, you know, this is where I'm going to be, and that feels good. It's like, we're bringing you into the family, dude.
Yeah, had to feel good. But also, I want to know, was it pressure for you? Because at that time, it was the second largest deal for a pitcher who only had one full season of service. It was 4 years, option for five, over $9 million. So with that confidence and feeling like I am part of this family, they want me here, did you also feel pressure to live up to that big contract?
You know, not at the time, no.
That's good.
The contracts... you know, they're really based on, because we can't base them on anything in the future because it hasn't happened, right? So really a contract is based on what your results have been, and not just yours, but maybe historically there's some, you know, references that you can point to, but it's like, that's going to speak for itself after the fact, you know?
And that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. I never thought of it like that. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's like you're getting the contract based on
what's happened
because we can't base it on the future. But let's go out and create something new now.
Yeah.
You know, so it was that.
And you got a lovely a bonus with that deal as well.
Yeah.
And I have to bring your dad back in here because I love this. You wanted to give that $1 million bonus check to your dad.
Yeah, they worked so hard for us, and they supported us coming up, and I wanted to be able to give back to them the way that they gave to us. Just, you know, really, that was another thing you talked about earlier, the life lessons. My dad always put others before himself, and my mom did as well. And they didn't just do that with us. Like, that was who they were as people and still are.
Yeah.
And so, I wanted to, again, give back to them.
Yeah.
That's part of what drives me in the community as well. It's like, you know, what can we do with what we've been given? How can we help others?
Be of service.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got that from your folks. Yeah, yeah. All right, so 2006, you're on top of the world. You're expecting to be a Giants pitcher for, you know, years to come now. But that season began...
Bing, bang, boom.
Yeah. Here we go, starting with a series of injuries that really... I can't imagine what that journey and what you were going through. So tell me what happened that first start of that year.
It makes me grit my teeth just thinking about
it. Oh, man.
Like, I feel so good coming in. And
I'm sorry.
No, it's part of who I am.
It is.
I don't like to say it, but I'm a glass house. I'm like, I'm a glass house.
Well, welcome to the club, right?
It's like, you put all this time in, and like I feel for guys that watch injuries unfold. It's like, because I know the amount of time and effort that these guys put into preparing themselves to be ready to play at that level. And it was the same. I was feeling good, you know.
Yeah.
And we had a couple games on the road, and I was like our three guys. So I got the opening day start at home.
Hello.
Like, that was cool.
Right?
Feeling good, man, nuts, and then bing, bang, boom, I get this injury, and
the oblique.
Yeah, and then it's like, all right, now what? Now we're gonna have to start to claw our way back, and it's frustrating.
Yeah,
it is, you know, and things are gonna come up, and eventually injuries took me out of the game.
Right, but, which you could never have foreseen after that oblique.
Yeah,
issue.
You know, you just. Because again, we can't predict the future. It's like, okay, an occurrence happens. I know that I'm hardworking. I'm gonna go put the work in, and I'm gonna do whatever it takes to prepare myself to get ready again. And mentally, it strengthened me because it's like you're gonna be faced with something. You can go one of two ways.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can sink into.
Despair.
Feeling sorry for yourself or despair, right? That's a great word. And or we can call ourselves up to, you know, a new level of whatever it may be or something new, because it's going to be new. And for that year, I struggled a little bit. I got back health-wise to get myself onto the field, just like reaching back to go throw, and the torque just wasn't the same, you know, just like there was time, I feel like. I just needed like more time for my body to just continue to build the strength that I'd built up over time for so long. And again, I don't know how true that is, but that's what I made up about it, and I could see it just in the results. And so that year was tough, and I struggled that year. That was the one year that I had a really difficult year.
Yeah, and because then at the end of the season, was it the elbow? Or
It wasn't that year. It was
Walk me through, because now there's like three more situations that you had to deal with in the next year or two.
Yeah, yeah, because coming into like, again, I think, again, just more time after that oblique, and you know, like it all starts to run together in my mind.
I bet.
And maybe it was like part of the same year. I couldn't, so I may be off there.
It's okay.
But
it's okay.
But coming into like another, you know, the following year, and then having again, there was a time, I don't remember what year it was, but I don't know how many wins, losses, so to speak. But then I ended up 13-13, and that was a big deal to just be able to come back from, you know, just getting banged around a little bit. But then that year with the oblique, I think I finished with a losing record, and it just...
It was a lot. I can see why it's like...
Yeah, no, I'm like trying to like recount.
Because then you had the elbow, then you had the forearm.
Well, I had these different things occur towards the end of my days on the field as well. But I also had, just before that, I was really feeling good, like in a groove.
Yeah.
Back, I had my strength back, and like I was out there, and some of this stuff happened with my arm and my back and neck. It just, I was like, I think if I had 14 wins, I don't remember how many losses, but I was feeling really good that year. And then again, glass house.
Yeah.
Here I come again. And so
it felt like every two steps forward, you were taking another step back. Yeah. Did it kind of feel like that?
Yeah.
It's like, can I get a break here?
Well, you know? Like what I'm looking at myself, like, okay, well, how am I contributing to this? You know, what do I need to make adjustments in? And then like, I only know so much. So relying on others. And,
yeah.
Really just trying to, again, navigate through what was at the time, and just so that I can get myself back to being the best I can be for our team and myself.
Of course,
on that field. And it didn't end up working out that way.
Yeah.
You know, the mind was like, the mind still is like,
I know,
oh yeah, you can go out and perform, and the body's like, no, dude.
Yeah. Right.
It's not gonna happen.
Body's like, those days are over, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
But so let's get into it. I mean, mentally and emotionally, how you dealt with all of this, because all of these injuries ultimately took you out of the game. That, you know, that arm that got you drafted and into the majors is now, you can't use it anymore. It's now kind of let you down.
Yeah.
So, and I know you've been open about sharing how difficult it was to get over the fact that you could no longer play baseball. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. That the transition out of the game was a difficult one for me. I had made up all these stories about like, oh yeah, I'm going to be good. You know, I've got all this stuff set up on the outside, and I'm thinking about longer term. Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Right.
No, okay. So reality is,
right,
is like, who am I now? Like, what does life look like? Like, what's next? What do I bring to the table? You know?
Back to that kid you were in high school trying to figure it out.
It was the same patterns coming up again. Right. Like, all the same things that I was facing going into the game, I was facing coming out.
Yeah.
It resurfaced.
Look how life is.
You nailed it.
Look at that. Well, that's like,
it's beautiful.
Right. It's full circle.
So now there's nowhere to run, and it's time to address it. And but I didn't necessarily at the time have the resource to do so. I found this organization through a buddy of mine called Blood and Ethos, and they focus really on transition. Mm-hmm. And in that, just the mental side of transition. And again, really just ordering chaos in our lives and releasing beauty on the other end of it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's an organization I still stay involved with to this day. But it wasn't until 7-8 years into my transition that I found them, and thank God I did. But
so prior to that, it had been a pretty much a big struggle for you.
It was a tough period on myself, my wife. I was trying to figure out who I was. I was depressed.
Yeah.
Just like beating myself up about this past that I couldn't go back and change.
Yeah, and that you really had no control over anyway.
Hanging on to all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it took, again, some time with this organization and really starting to think about, okay, well, you know, there's a bigger story here, and like, how can this become part of this journey, and how does it end up playing out? Mm-hmm. And so I started to see the beauty in it. And I started to realize some of the skills that I amassed over my time in the game. And I started to look at, like, what I'd prefer to be doing as opposed to, like, what the heck am I going to do?
You know?
So, like, it was really reframing my thinking.
Yeah. But you had to do the work. You had to get down in it and do some soul searching of that, right?
I feel like it almost, I made up that it almost took me out. Like, And part of me, I thought it was going to happen. I had a panic attack.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought, like, my heart was beating up. What is happening here?
Yeah.
Andrea, my wife, I'm like, you might need to call someone. I'm like, I'm just going to go lay down. I'm not sure what's going on.
Oh, my gosh.
I usually kept myself, like, pretty stable somewhat with just, like, either the highs or the lows emotionally. Like, it just internalize them, which wasn't the best thing either, but it all caught up to me.
And, yeah, your body was saying,
and the body's like, yeah, this no more.
You gotta wake up here.
Anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So, yeah, like you said, diving deep and just really, like, one, what I was going to do next, who I was now, you know, what did life look like on the other end of this, and how was I going to start to think through that? And how was I going to start to resource it in a way that I hadn't seen? They bring, his name's Dan Tacchini, and he puts this pie chart up, and it talks about, like, the things that we know and the things that we don't know, and how we move the things that we don't know into, like, what we know by, you know, we could either study or we go through experience, right? And then the biggest piece of this thing is, like, the I don't know what I don't know. And, you know, those blind spots maybe are just things that I have no idea about what I don't know. I had no clue where I was at in life. And, like, there was a lot of things that resource-wise I just didn't even consider thinking about. It was, like, the whole new way of thinking. I knew how to go out and prepare myself on the field performance-based. And I knew how to engage a team, and I knew what it took to get myself ready there, but wow, this other side of life, I don't know anything about.
Right.
I've made up a story about, oh yeah, I'm gonna be fine.
Yeah.
It's all great.
Yeah.
But that's not the reality of it.
No.
And I don't know. I think that maybe it's that way for a lot of people in transition, but I don't know.
No, it is. It is. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to what you're saying. Change is hard. And it's challenging. Did you ever feel any bitterness about it, particularly early on, or get to your mind?
Early on, yeah. Early on, sure. I wanted to, I wanted to, you know, try to, again, just these stories that I was telling myself, I wanted to try to find out, I wanted to try to recreate the past that I couldn't go back and change. And so, you know, I was not just depressed, but just like, I guess, bitterness would be a good word. Like, I was hanging on to, like, like, what could I have done differently? Did we do everything that we could have done as a group? And we did, you know. I had really good people behind me that cared a lot about just me as a person, you know. And it really just took me getting through that and knowing that, again, like, we gave it our best effort, and sometimes, you know, there's a bigger plan out there, and it may not necessarily be what I think it is. I'm looking at one, just like, in that struggle, I wonder if there are other athletes that can go through. So who go through this mm-hmm. this transition, and maybe it's not the same story, obviously, but maybe they have their own. And so, like, what resources are in place for them, and like, what can we look at helping them out with?
That's great. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And then on the front end of that, you know, we talked a little bit about the transition into the game, and you know, what type of resources are in place for those families and those young athletes who are transitioning into sport, and as well transitioning out. And
yeah.
So, that's where I'm at today. That's sitting here now.
It's a pretty good place to be.
Having those, yeah.
Pretty good place to be.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And there's one person in particular that really cared about you, that was your soldier through it all, and that is your lovely wife, Andrea.
Oh, yes. She has been, she's been just a foundation, you know, I put her through a lot in that transition, and, she stood by my side and supported me.
That she did.
And it provided. We've got three beautiful kids now, and we're in a place where we're creating, you know, a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finally back to present. At least I think I am.
Yeah.
And so in that, it's like there's an excitement about what our relationship becomes from here.
Yeah.
You know.
And
do we want to look at more kids? Like.
Yeah.
We can be excited about hanging out together again,
right.
I think.
Right.
Well,
we were talking earlier about marriages and relationships, and you do, you reinvent, you reconnect over the years, because that's a whole different journey, and that's a whole different show, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. But I want you to please tell the story of how you met your wife. I love this story.
Yeah, so, yeah, Andrea, she wasn't a big, baseball fan by any means, and, I kind of liked that about her, because I made up, like, who knows, like, what, you know, people's intentions are. And
exactly.
She's out doing her own thing. Mm-hmm. She's independent, and she's really just fixated on other things, and it's beautiful. I like the person that she is,
mm-hmm.
and I got banged around at a game, and we got a chance to really get to know each other at, like, quickly at this restaurant after I was going to go just try to forget about the game, go have a dinner and maybe a drink or two, and like turn the page on this terrible game that I had.
You got rocked. Washington Nationals,
by
the way.
It was the Nationals.
Not to bring it up, Noah.
It was the Nationals.
You got rocked, and, you know, normally you would maybe go out with your teammates and kind of rehash and go over it, but you said that day you needed to be alone.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a little bit of time. I was going to go have this meal and turn the page. I was like, well, let's just put it behind us. So,
and there she was.
Yeah, with a friend of hers, and so we met, and like we hung out a little bit, and that was really when social media was becoming like.
Ugh.
We were like, it was MySpace back then.
Oh my goodness.
Tom, everybody's got Tom as their friend, but we started to connect over social after that.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Because it was like, boom, boom, we met each other, you know, and if she was here. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she said it a few times. She's like, I didn't really know if I liked you that much. I had a lot going on at the time, right? I was like, I'd just gotten banged around.
That's
like,
right.
I'm kind of all over the place. And but in that, we got a chance to, again, connect. So there was one beautiful part about this social media aspect that allowed us to stay in touch and find times where we could meet up again after that, but it was because I got banged around a little bit and got a chance to go meet her that
so thank you, Washington Nationals,
started. Yeah,
thank you, Nationals, for bringing
at our
her...
team's expense. Yes,
that's right.
And in the Nationals, yes, this woman, this beautiful woman, became a huge part of my life, and now our life together.
With
so,
those three beautiful kids, ages now, two girls and a baby boy.
Yes, yeah, two girls, Averly and Annie Aniston, who's her name, we call her Annie. They're 7 and 5, and then Axel, we had just before these crazy fires erupted up here. He's almost a year.
Bless his little heart.
Well, awesome.
You do live up here. We do need to talk about that, because you all had to get out of your house within a matter of minutes when the fires hit last year.
Oh, it was scary time.
I cannot imagine. And yeah, that little baby boy. Oh,
we had just had Axel. Not just because it happened a few weeks after, but you know, looking back on it, it's like it felt like we'd just gotten home from the hospital, and woke up in the middle of the night to just fire everywhere, and And my daughters followed right behind. I remember looking out the front window, and I mean, everywhere left to right was just huge flames, not far off of us. So it's like, all right, we gotta start to move. You know, yeah. The heart starts going.
Oh, and my goodness. Because the flames were like 100 feet or something.
They were a couple hundred yards at the time.
Jeez.
And it took a while to get up to us eventually. But, you know, I'm not thinking about any of that at the time. It's like, we just got to go.
You got to
get out of here.
Yeah.
This is like, it was almost surreal.
Yeah,
like,
I bet.
Everything was covered in fire. So I just remember waking Andrea up and like, we got to get moving. And the kids, they were already, Averly and Aniston were already up. They saw it and they were panicked.
Oh my goodness.
You know? So, you know, what do you take? Well, I can't get my kids back and I can't get my relationships back. And that's most important to me.
Yeah.
Priorities they become very apparent very quick.
Very quick, in that situation.
All this other stuff, it has some sentimental value, but I only get one Annie and Averly and Andrea and Maxwell, and I want to get them to safety. And
mm-hmm.
and then so we got the car loaded and made sure that our neighbors, you know, as I'm going out there, I saw my neighbor and he's telling me, you know, I've talked to everybody on the street and it's good, just get your stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, you get out of here. And I remember just putting a few things in the car, and as I was doing it, like I could hear, like it kept me up for a while. Like I could just hear like blood curdling screams up into that, and like people yelling back and forth like they couldn't get to each other.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't sleep for a while after that.
I would imagine not. Really? And it hasn't been that long ago. I mean, it probably still comes back to you from time to time.
Yeah, just thinking about it. Yeah, it's like a lot of emotion.
And then trying to keep the kids, you know, they must have been traumatized. And, you know, how do you
parent them?
That was tough.
Yeah. One thing that I've seen in tragedy in this event is that our community has really bonded together, and resources have been put into place. Like there's people that they can go talk to. We have conversations around it because Aniston, especially, she was at a place where you could just tell she was struggling with it. She was waking up like thinking everything around her was like melting type thing, you know? And
man.
So it was like, okay, well, like, let's talk a little bit about just like the reality of what was and what is. And, you know, yes, things can happen in life, but, you know, will this necessarily be something that happens again? Well, maybe, but the chances are not.
Not
great. So, you know, it gives us a chance, to connect over new conversation. But the community as a whole and humanity in general really steps up and comes together in times of need. And that's really beautiful to see, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, like, warms my heart after going through all that, and like our first responders and even community members, like they're putting their lives on the line. Like that.
Those are the real heroes.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
It's like I just think about, you know, like one, of course, our safety, and then like the safety of our community. How many lives were saved because of the sacrifices that
and the bravery
these people made for us?
That's right.
Heroic. Yeah.
How are you guys doing now? How are the kids doing?
Yeah, you know, we're doing good.
Good.
We're doing good. Thank you for asking. We just moved out of the area that we were in for a little bit of time and into a new area temporarily here until we figure out what we're going to do. But it's brought our family closer together. In the midst of it all, we ended up getting a dog.
Oh.
We got Rosie now, so I've got somebody else outside of the A names that
that's right.
is living with us. That's
happiness.
Annie's a dog lover. Uh-huh. She loves animals in general. She really just gravitates towards them.
Oh.
And it's not like a, I love you. It's like a, I love you. So we found a dog that's like really good with kind of like a tougher love, I'll call it.
Right.
And she's just like, it lit her world up, and like they're super tight. And
that's the best. And like dogs are therapeutic. Oh, that's going to help her through.
So good, yeah.
Through getting through this tragedy and everything. That's so awesome.
Yeah. It was like that.
That is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So life is good after baseball.
Yeah.
What else are you doing up here? I know you're involved with the Junior Giants, which is so cool, in Santa Rosa.
The Junior Giants are a huge like part of my life, and the why behind that is that program and what it stands for, the life lessons that it provides kids, the opportunity that it provides them, and confidence, integrity, leadership, teamwork, where you, that applies everywhere.
Like,
I apply that in my day-to-day life.
Everywhere, yeah.
Reading and anti-bullying and health, you know, it's like, it's so well put together, and the fact that, the Giants community stands behind it, and these kids are able to play for free.
Yeah. And these are kids in primarily underserved communities, which is huge, too.
They would never
otherwise have that opportunity.
Yeah.
It's a great program.
Again, I really believe wholeheartedly in it. I try to serve, here locally and then wherever I can with it, because, again, I see the impact that it has.
Yeah.
And it's a special one.
Noah, I can't thank you enough. What a great conversation. It has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Renaud. I really appreciate it. The time is always enjoyed here.
It's so good to see you. And it's been a pleasure getting to know you over these years. So thanks to Toomey Cellars for having us out here at their beautiful estate here.
Yes.
We should cheers.
What a beautiful location it is.
To you and your beautiful family, and continued blessings to you, young man.
Salud.
Cheers.
And go Giants.
Go Giants.